So palms up. Feel the stream of blessing, which of course is always with us, but to bring one's awareness and intention to it is also very important. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Take the sacred sound that we made with the mouth. It becomes like a mandala as we say these sacred phrases and words, and you know, like the mandalas and then the sand, they sweep it away. We're going to blow that into our hands. And we're going to use it as a blessing upon us and through us. So, from yesterday, did anything come up? Any questions, thoughts, concerns?
Are you going to review the breathing practice you gave, the light and life?
Do you want to do that? We could do it at the end of class. It's very special. And there's a point at which you start to actually feel the true nature of the body, which isn't solid at all. You really feel like the cells and the molecules are almost like little sipping cups that are taking that in. I often think of it also as like we're this, like a solar panel in a way, where we can amp up and then we can generate it out. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Yeah, I was really focusing on it radiating.
Yes.
This morning.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw you maybe doing that this morning.
That makes it easy.
Yeah, it does.
Yes. I have a question, sort of a technical question, but I know Marcia wanted his prayers to be kept as he gave them.
Yes.
And you mentioned, and I have run into a lot, changing master to, was it mystery?
I think it was Moynihan, actually. Pure Moynihan said mystery.
Okay.
I think for me, I like to say the words the prayers were given, because I think they have a certain quality to them. And of course, we know about mysticism of vibration and sound, so we hook up with that. But I think, that there can be people that, if it creates an aversion, then how can you maybe change it? There was someone that went, she's a Murid in our circle, and I just don't like the prayers. I like to make up my own prayers. I said, so don't do the prayers. But you know what? She's come to adore, and she knows every line. Every line, and she's come to adore them. But, you know, I just like, if you don't, well, okay, don't do them. It's not, you know, it's your path. I'm not your prisoner, and the message isn't one's prisoner either. So I offered that, because some people get confused, like, what does that mean, the master? Is someone going to be my master? Inshallah, should we have a master.
Spiritual liberty gives us a lot of freedom, you know?
Mastery.
Pierre Valadiat would always say, the trouble is people don't know what to do with their freedom.
Mm-hmm. He's right.
Right?
Yeah. I resemble that remark.
Well, we can get really lack focus, can't we? Having a routine is very, I think, wise. And Marcia always, he again and again talks about balance and rhythm. Balance and rhythm. You know, I think balance in activity and repose and a rhythm, having a regular rhythm. I think that's why Pierre Shabda also does that on his breath as a practice when he walks, towards the one step that's always in the 4B. Mm.
Thank you.
So it creates a kind of rhythm. And, you know, those of you that have been around him, you know, he's pretty, I mean, I've known him more than half my life. And he's like steady, really steady. So that's helpful. Any other questions before we get into today's class? Or comments?
I want a point of clarification.
Yes.
When you're saying Murshid, sometimes I'm
yes,
hearing Hazrat Naikon.
Hazrat, I'll Hadayat. Say Hazrat and Naikon. Yeah.
So if it's Hadayat, what do you say?
Murshid Hadayat.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. For me, Murshid is Hazrat and Naikon. Okay. But I know it can be confusing, so I'll try to remember to clarify that. Thank you so much. But no, Hazrat and Naikon again and again. If you just go to that website, it's Hazrat and Naikon with hyphens in between the words, .org. You know, there's a search engine there, and you can just type in rhythm and then search, you know, all the citations and all the message volumes and
really?
Balance. Oh, yeah, it's the best tool ever.
I'm on it.
I own it, too. And on our website, it's on the links cool. back there. So, but it's Hazrat and Naikon, and in between each word, it's a hyphen, okay, .org. Great tool to study by and search.
Does it have an app?
I don't think so.
That's cool.
But I just use it on my phone. You know. I just go to the main website.
Thank you.
Very thirsty. It's dry. Mm-hmm. It's unusual that we should have such dry weather. I always have thirst anyway, so let me get a little sip here. This is too hot. Let me have the water. Oh, did you start to record?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to go grab you some water?
No, okay. I don't. I'm going to be fine. This will be just fine. It will cool down. So just to review a little bit, yesterday we were talking about, Murshid was kind of giving us this overall view into the deeper side of life as he coined it. It was, if you want to search under that. And again, on our website, I put a link to the teaching on that to that website. And, you know, he introduced us to this idea of self-knowledge is very, very important. And, you know, when you look at, if you study the tradition of Islam at all, you know that there is this, what's referred to as the arc of ascent and the arc of descent. I've probably talked about this before. You could liken the arc of ascent is one going towards God, the search for God, realization. That's only half the journey. The other half is coming into self-realization. So that's what we're talking about. It's an integration of that, so that you, I remember one of my dear friends, a spiritual teacher in India, and she'd say, I don't know what's going on with those yogis. They just climb the ladder to the roof and then they kick the ladder out. And she was part of an integral yoga. She was on the path of Sri Aurobindo, and he talked about, again, you know, many traditions talk about that, you know, how do you begin the path, you follow the path, and you integrate the path, you know. And so I just wanted to mention that. So Murshid's talking about self-knowledge. And then he drew a line between don't be self-conscious, it's not self-consciousness. We're talking about self-knowledge, you know. Or, you know, sometimes we can be self-critical. It's not that. It's that, not that. If you start to do that, Murshid also talks that that's a form of pride. It can be a form of vanity. Oh, I'm not, you know, being overly humble can be as bad as not being humble at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all balance, isn't it? It's all a balance. So then we did the practice, kudus. Do you remember what it means?
Purifying.
Wolf backwards.
Oh. Yeah, it's for purification. Mm-hmm. So you can take that and do that when you feel you need it. These are not meant to be haphazardly used. They're meant to be used consistently. And yet, if you've done the practice, any of you that have been doing the practice for a number of years, you know where you need to go for the antidote. This is arising. What is it that I... And if you know the practice as well, then you can go to that, and it will reinvigorate it with inside yourself. So you can use it as a touchstone again and again. So Caduce could be one of those. And as I said, Murshida Vira used Caduce a lot, so it was something I'm very accustomed to using, and it is a touchstone for me.
Thank you.
And then Mersha talked about the body, and then he also talked about the breathing system and how important it is to have the body in good working order. You know, sometimes if a mirror contacts me and feels that things are out of kilter or they don't have the capacity to handle the situations of life, the first things I ask them is, have you been sleeping regularly? Because often it's like, oh no, I stay up too late, let me get up. So sleeping, eating, drinking enough water, and some form of exercise, even just walking is important. And then once that, we know that's, and a lot of times there's an irregularity in one of those things. So you can heal yourself in so many ways if you just take those things into account. Right, Nurnisa? You've lived a long life, and you have some things to teach us on that, I'm sure. And look at her. You drove from... I always forget it. I always say, do you live in Florida or North Carolina? Or South Carolina?
South Carolina.
See, I can never quite remember. It's over there somewhere. She drives by herself. It's extraordinary. Amazing woman. So, you know, you don't get that age without taking care of yourself and being wise. And then we did the breathing system. And we'll do that again if we have time, Jabbar, and I'll try to make time. Try to really make these teachings short and pithy. So then today it's on the thinking faculty. And this is what Murshid has to say. I think it's the most subtle teaching. It'd be easy to read over these words and not, you know, in my preparation, I start reading things months in advance and then keep studying them and studying so I, you know, and then I come to here. And it says... when we go still further, we find there is when we go still further, we find that there is a being in us which we believe to perhaps be within the body or perhaps somewhere else. One cannot pinpoint it, but it is there. And it is what we call mind. Now, again, anyone that's studied Buddhism, you know that there's that whole discourse. Is the mind, and that, I don't want to gross you out, but it's kind of like this, you know, if someone would cut off my arm, would they be cutting off the mind, you know? If they cut off my leg, if I lost, where is the mind? Where exactly is that mind? So, you know, that's kind of a deconstruction of thought about where the mind is in a way. So, this thinking faculty has its seat in the physical being, but is not limited by the physical body. So it's, you know, we become a vessel or a vehicle. Again, In Tibetan Buddhism, it says the highest one can attain to is a precious human birth. They say it's like a blind tortoise in a vast ocean trying to find an inner tube or a ring and to get its head up through that ring. That's how precious it is. Now, I've had people call, some people said, I'm just in complete despair. I think it's time for me to commit suicide. And I said, well, think about it for 24 hours, but if you think that's the right thing to do, go for it. It shocks them into thinking, you know, because they're expecting, oh, don't do that. Oh, there's so much to live for. It's like, okay, let me know how that works out. And, you know, I've had them contact me again saying, Oh my God, how much things have changed. The whole life changes. So, but it is a precious birth, and we do need to, things do, we do have challenges in life. We have sorrows, but we also have happiness and joy. And if you don't, then I'm going to say without any judgment whatsoever, sometimes we do have to go to a doctor. There could be a chemical imbalance, and if one had diabetes, they would take insulin. And if one has always a sadness, it's not the normal state. You can get help. There's a pill for that. And there's an app for that. I mean, I'm not pushing drugs, but I do know of what I speak. We've had that in our family. And I know how people have gotten their lives returned to them because they were able to have the right brain chemistry for once in their lives. So no doubt it functions in the organ of sense, again, the thinking faculty. No doubt it functions in the organs of sense and in the nervous centers in order to perfect our experience. Nevertheless, it's independent of the physical body. It is a faculty that can exist without the physical body. But think about what he's talking about. What is he talking about here? Something, and yet it doesn't even require a physical body. As the eyes can exist without spectacles, the spectacles only help the eyes to see more clearly. What does that mean to you?
Bringing into focus.
Okay, anyone else? Raheem?
So our body and its senses are just tools whereby our mind can have access to this particular time and place.
Yeah, I think he's talking about really the soul quality. And in order to have an earthly experience, it does need a body. Doesn't mean it can't exist without it. But, you know, and some people call that the mind. Here's Merchant's talking about. He goes further to say something about this. He says, the mind is the surface of that part of our being of which the depths are called the heart. So the thinking faculty, Sam, how about if you come and sit in this chair? I'm afraid you're gonna have a terrible creak in your neck from doing this. I just think, oh my gosh, I don't want you to feel so uncomfortable. If it's okay with you. It'd be better, maybe. You can turn it if you need to. It's just you've been so sweet and you haven't made any noise. I'm thinking, oh, ouch. So the mind is the surface of that part of our being of which the depths are called the heart. Think about Merchant the Prayer. Heal my body, heart, and soul. It's there in the prayer, in the Nyas. So he's talking about now these different levels. Did you have a question?
Yeah, what's the difference between the mind and thinking?
I think, and for me, this is what it, for me, is quite clear, because, you know, through experience, and you probably have had it as well in your meditation. The mind is like a field, or the vast blue sky. And thinking are like the clouds that pass over the sky. They arise from somewhere and they go somewhere else. We don't even know from where, but they arise and they dissipate. Now, in meditation, it can be quite difficult if you have the tendency to want to follow that. But if you can just see the arising of it and the dissipation of it, that in and of itself can be a meditation to calm the mind. Or it could be, again, like this clear, in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they describe it as this large field. In a sense, it's empty, but it also contains everything. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. but anything can arise out of it and things can go to it. But, you know, in a physical sense, it's like the mind is the field and the thoughts are what we plant in it.
So the mind is always there.
The mind is always there. It's all pervading consciousness.
In their prayer, heal my body, heart, and soul. My mind always is in there too.
Yeah.
I finish it with my mind because I want to think clearly.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I think it's fine. there's been quite a bit of expression given to the prayers a lot, especially because it lists them in the male prophets. But there's such a subtlety in that, you know. And tell me, Nirvana, is it true you wouldn't really write G-O-D, you would write G-space-D?
In the conservative and Orthodox Judaism?
That's true.
And that's what I grew up with? But
yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, I guess it has to do with the sacredness of the baby.
Right. Some things aren't spoken. And so, I believe that worship, because worship doesn't, I don't know if they called it then, but, you know, it was a feminist. The ones that he appointed to the highest positions were women. He entrusted, he always sent them a message without a feminine ray to it.
Well, Muhammad was viewed by the first feminist with liberalization. Because he truly thought about women. Like the polygamy. People don't understand what he said about that. And he told the men, yeah, it's okay if you can treat each guy equally.
Yeah, I could
be
50 to wife as long as I get all the jewelry in the house.
Yeah, it's not enough for you to
learn
one,
let alone right? Yeah, I know. You don't see very many men more than my wife does. The same thing with the veil. You know, it wasn't necessarily a physical piece of cloth, but it was intended for a kind of modesty and protection. Well, I wanted to add, because I want to think about this, I wanted to say about prayers a lot, and let me finish that thought, because when you say each of the prophets' names, you take a moment. We tend to do it, because we know, if I slow down, I won't remember the names in order. But if you do it and you think just in the gap of that feminine impulse or counterpart to the nice, it doesn't require necessarily meaning. And to be very honest, Bob will tell you the same. When you started to do that, you felt like I don't agree. I'm not gonna say that someone shouldn't follow their own inspiration. And I said that please promise me when you show that text that day. It is always addressed as modified version, maybe with the date, and you put the original version next to it. So people will always know that original version. I think it's important we get things, and we know that from the Bible. The translations and transliterations. So I think it's fine if you want to add mine to it. Mercy would be just fine.
Thank you.
But don't start publicizing and teaching. And Narani, you were going to say something.
I'm a little confused when you were talking about, so what's he saying about the mind? I thought, well, he's describing it like I would describe soul, and you said something about soul, but mind and soul are different.
They're different, but in Buddhist tradition they kind of link them, that the heart is kind of the soul is what they say. You know, they always point here, my mind. Which is a wonderful place to point, right?
It's good.
Our mind. Yeah. I mean, when you do this gesture, you know, which is beautiful because it's like this, the thumbs go like this. So when you look at it this way, it's like a lotus.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not It's very gentle, and then you body, speech, mind. That's what that gesture is. And when you get a holy object from the East, if it's a statue, they take sutras that are written on small pieces of paper and they roll them up, you know. Used to get fortunes like that, remember? And then they put precious gems that are colors representing these different centers. And then they put the prayers. And then it's always sealed at the bottom with a double dorji, protection. And then the tankas are always, in order for the deity to become alive and living, they have those marks at those areas of body, speech, mind. So you know if it's been blessed and invited the deity in. So we're getting off the subject, but we go back. There's never really any off the subjects, I don't think. But so to answer your question, Naranan, if you write me and you're really interested, I can point you in the right direction where Mirsha talks about these different aspects. And I don't know, does he liken it, or is that my analogy about the coconut?
I don't.
You know, so he talks about the body. So think of a coconut, right? So the body's like this outer layer. It's the thing we see. But it's also hard, right? It can be very hard. And hairy. That's right. Don't say that in front of Joey. Looks like a Yeti. He's my Yeti. But, you know, in the East, they use the coconuts a lot in ceremony to break them, you know. And so that's like breaking the hardness that we get fixated on the outer reality. And then what we come to is that flesh. It's a little softer. So body, heart, and then what's inside is that beautiful liquid, you know. Body, heart, and soul, you know. So there are different layers of our being. Mirsha talks about that in many of the message volumes. And he talks about healing in those different levels. We've talked about that, I know, about the breaths and using those for healing. So no doubt the functions of the organs of sense and in the nervous system, no doubt it functions in the organs of sense, again, the mind, the thinking, and in the nervous systems in order to perfect our experience. Nevertheless, it is independent of the physical body. It is a faculty that can exist without the physical body, as the eyes can exist without spectacles. The spectacles only help the eyes to see more clearly. The mind is the surface of that part of our being of which the depths are called heart. The mind is. You go deeper still. The mind thinks. Listen to these two. He's going to give you this and this. The mind thinks. The heart feels. The mind perceives. The heart reflects. The mind imagines. The heart enjoys. The thoughts of the mind are strengthened by the heart. You know, we even use it in our language. I just love something. You know what I mean? So it's that, Mirsha's always said that too. It's that love element that, you know, I mean, we could move mountains with it. The heart enjoys. The thoughts of the mind are strengthened by the heart, yet mind and heart are two things. They are the two aspects of one thing. One is the surface and one is the depths. I love these parallels, you know, because one seems, what do they seem to you as those two parallels? What other things do we have parallels or counterpoints to.
Gut instinct.
Okay.
Male
and female. You see how one's more active and one's more reflective?
Mm-hmm. Little friend.
Come in. So I think there's this aspect of, it almost seems one's harder or more material, one's much more subtle, you know? So those different levels of perception. What was that quote of Mershit's? Can you pull that up? The recent one about the reason? You were singing the song the other day. That was a bowl of sake recent.
Mm-hmm.
Day or two ago.
Let's see. I want you. Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
We can come back.
No, you keep looking.
I'll keep looking. But I mean, I'm going to keep looking.
Yes.
I just love and wanted to make a note of, but that's a duality, but it's a whole.
That's exactly right.
It's the mind is the surface of which the heart is the depth. That line in particular struck me to say they are two essences, but they are two essences of one entity. Or one isness.
That's right.
And that, you know, as you said, the heart strengthens the thoughts of the mind. But it's, you know, they can be considered separately, and there's benefit to considering the qualities of each of them. But I love the concept that they are also a unified whole.
Me too. And I think okay, there's that quote. Go ahead and read that one.
The knowledge of God is beyond man's reason. The secret of God is hidden in the knowledge of unity.
That's what you're saying. You want her to read it again? Mm-hmm. Yes. And that, what day is that in the bowl of sake?
This was the 11th, the day camp started.
11th, so you can note that.
The knowledge of God is beyond man's reason. The secret of God is hidden in the knowledge of unity.
It's a really beautiful quote. And there were other ones about one's realization grows. I mean, there have been a few this week and last week that have been very special. And so things are neither this or that. They're this and that. That's the point. And the idea that sometimes, you know, we say, oh, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, how about I believe it when I feel it, right?
Yeah.
That's more to the point. And I think that's why, well, Mershit will go on here, and you're going to enjoy what he has to say, I think, because I do. So, and maybe I'll just go on. Let's see, is that in this today's teaching? Yeah. And then we'll do a practice, okay? Oh, I do need the time. Somebody can help me.
One
okay, so we have time. So then Mershit, so he's talking about this thinking realm of which there is the actual aspect of reason or logic or linear thought. Do you all know what I'm talking about when I say lateral thinking or asymmetric thinking versus vertical thinking? Mm-hmm. So vertical thinking is this process. I have to do this before this, before this. But that's linear. Lateral thinking is very broad thinking. You know, it's expansive. And nothing really of genius comes out of this. I have to do it this way and this way and this way. I mean, that's good for survival, you know. Big dinosaur comes, run fast, you know. but for this expression of what Mershit talks about, the imagination. The imagination is one thing, but to feel it gives joy. You know, it's not just caught in the conceptual realm. Does that make sense? I don't want to confuse anybody. Yeah. So the next aspect is the knowledge of self, and we're going to do a little bit today and the rest tomorrow. The fourth aspect of our being is beyond explanation. We seek for joy, and when the circulation of joy, which belongs in the depths of our being, is congested so that we cannot feel it, then we try to experience it in what we call pleasure. Now, I was thinking this is a very good answer to your question, Rabia. Why do we want to do the purification breaths every day? Murshid says here. This congestion is created in us so that we can't feel things the right way. And we often try to reason ourselves through it, but reason can get us a certain way, but then we have to somehow make this, I always call it kind of a leap of faith. So this helps to clear those tubes of congestion. Okay. And then Murshid says, we try to grasp this experience of joy through pleasure. It's as if a joy again could be likened to the field, and pleasure are these momentary things that happen, but they don't last forever. So we're grasping after the wrong things. Murshid goes on to say, pleasure is the shadow of happiness. In one of our recent classes, I don't know if it was a smiling how I've been doing these monthly, you know, and they're available online because we record them, and with links to the teaching and the practices. But it was about this very subject about feeling happiness and joy, and Murshid again and again says we search everywhere for it, and yet it is within. Again, there are exceptions. If you don't feel that ever or never have, talk to a doctor because there's help for that. And it's a shame when people suffer that way. And we've known people in our community that have suffered that way. And it's very sad. There's just there's nothing that can help. There needs to be a medical intervention. Pleasure is the shadow of happiness. Something that passes away, that does not last. Being continually occupied in seeking the wrong thing instead of looking for the right thing, we lose hold on something that belongs to us, our happiness. I'm trying to think of a good example. We begin to look for happiness everywhere, wherever we think we can find it, but we may look for it all our life, and yet it always eludes us. We think, now I've grasped it, and it's gone. We think, now I've got it, and it's lost. And we think, now it is mine, and it's no longer there. It's like, you know, when you do the turn. Mm-hmm. Or when you're meditating, you think, I'm really meditating. Oh, wait, no, I'm just thinking. Right? You lose it. And the turn's that way, like, wow, I'm really in the turn. Oh, wait. Yeah. You know, I've lost it. I've started to have self-thought again, and then I lose it, that connection.
The music's like that.
Music, mm-hmm. I'm sure it
especially
must be.
Especially if you're in the dance circle with a lot of other cats.
It's
just like that.
Yeah.
There's no time to think.
Yeah. I swim, you know, anyone that's an athlete of any kind or does a regular walking or running, I used to run, then I decided I'd save my joints. So I swim, but it's like getting in that kind of zone.
It's a hard thing.
It's a real hard thing, but when you get there, you just feel everything becomes effortless. Mm-hmm. And it's like perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you know it, you can feel it again. You know, it's like, I always remember that right after I was initiated, what happened. And I always feel that, then I remember a little while later what happened. You know, it was like a lot of stuff came up because there was a lot of karmic seeds that needed to be purified. And I was very, I mean, when my teacher gave me a practice, she might have well been giving me the most precious jewel you could ever imagine. And I just take it and I work it and work it and work it, work it. And, you know, just work it, work it, work it, work it. And I was just very diligent. I loved it. And I felt like it was a great gift. And then I could all, but I could also see how it would unearth things. I mean, I've said it before, illumination doesn't mean you just see all the good stuff. You see all the dust bunnies too.
What was it? Say it again.
Illumination doesn't mean you just see the good stuff. You know, you get to see the dust bunnies too. Things that have been collecting, you know.
Nice way of putting it.
It's a nice way of putting it.
That's a part of light.
Yeah. It was a nice way of putting it.
That's a part of light.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is, yeah. Because you can see more clearly. So, you know, when we feel like we're grasping after something, it's best to see if it comes towards you instead. Murshid says this idea it's like a shadow. The pursuit after a shadow is a pursuit after nothingness. Joy becomes eclipsed because we do not know that our very being is joy, that our very self is happiness.
So it's okay to be happy.
I sometimes wonder, because, you know, I smile at everybody all the time. And it's like, I'm always thinking, she's a little crazy. What's she want, you know?
Yeah. What's she up to?
What's she up? Why is she smiling at me? She doesn't know me.
What's your ulterior motive?
For smiling.
Yeah. I remember when I hooked up with the Sufis in Kansas City, and I'd gone through a divorce, and I was in deep into yoga, the mental. I went to the dances, and one of the teachers, could have been you, said, you know, Murshid Sen said, one of the purposes of the dances is to increase your joy. Oh my gosh. And I went from there, and I would go around looking at people in the eye, and they were happy, and I'm like, oh, this is nice. And you come to Sufi camp, and you get up in the morning, instead of rah, 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 you pass somebody, you say, good morning.
Yeah.
Hello. Good morning. Yeah. Oh, this is nice.
Mm-hmm. I like to do that even for people I don't know. But I find people are generally, in Kansas City at least, pretty responsive, you know. Joe likes to tell this story. It's like I go to take a walk around the block, and it's like hours. It's like, what happened? It's like, you know what? Everyone had to stop. We had to all talk. And then I go and I'm like a gerbil. I try to find a different route so I don't, you know. Sometimes you just want to walk, and that's what you want to do, not walk and talk. You want to just walk.
Yeah, your good friend Gopi Eliza Kane is like that.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can ask her a question, but would you like some rice? And 3 hours later, she's...
By looking for happiness, what does one seek after? We're seeking after our very self. He said it like, you know, 5 times already, right? There's nothing so easily lost as the self. I mean, I do know people that they don't even know. You say, what would you like to do? I don't know. They don't, because they've gotten lost in other people, other things, circumstances, and... I think there's no shame in that, but I think if there's no awareness of it, there's the shame, because it's good to grasp a hold of that and really stop. You know, our friend Murshida Asha Greer, she's into that whole program, stop. You're just supposed to stop. And it's like, you know, just stop. Stop the thinking, stop the moving, stop. You know, she'll do classes where she'll be talking, stop. But it's a good thing to think about, because we become automatic. And again, if you feel like you've lost, and you know, some of us do that. We have to take care of ailing parents, or heaven forbid if we've had children or spouses that are ill, you do lose yourself and you give it freely, but then it's good to come back. Come back home to the refuge after the work is done.
Can I make a comment? Mm-hmm. I know people in the song every half hour their watch alarm will come off just so that they can get back to the present.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. If you can do that. Just to bring the mind back.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing so easily lost as the self. In one instance, a person can lose it because we're always so accustomed to hold things that are in hand. And there's only one thing that we can never hold, and that is the self. It instantly slips from grasp. Naturally, happiness is lost in the search for pleasure. And self becomes drowned in the pursuit of outer things. There's a way to transform the thinking. Example. So I'm the kind of person where I'd rather save money than spend money. Just, I don't know, I was raised that way. So when I started working, I don't know, I was probably lied and got working somewhere at 14, 15. And I started saving. I opened a savings account, and then I became a professor in college, take the maximum amount you can from my pay. Then I started investing. I made constant investments. And you know, you accumulate this way. Then I was living in India, and I said to my teacher, I think I could stay here and just go deeply into the Dharma. And there were other students that he had, Tibetans, Indians, people from Europe, you know, from South America. And he always let them stay. And he said, no, you go back. Well, I felt a little heartbroken. And I said, well, Rinpoche, there would be no problem. I have investments. I could live very well. I wouldn't be a burden to anybody. He said, no, you're a bridge. And he said, you don't have to get caught in the material world, but the profession, which is education, he thinks there are certain professions. You know, when you help other people learn and grow, what better thing, or heal people. You know, it's a great thing. And we all do that in our own ways, whether we call it being an educator or a healer, a doctor, whatever. So he said, you go back. And the thing is, you earn as much money as you can. And he said, and you keep some for yourself. And what good you can do for other people, you can help that way. And I thought, there's the purpose. It's not just chasing the green, it's sharing the green.
Yeah, helping.
And, you know, one of my great mentors, Murshid Karim Bashbidevin, you know, he was a great economist. He was the founding member of the International Monetary Fund. He was one of the architects of the European Union and the Euro. It was love, harmony, and beauty. He thought unity would make all the countries stronger. We found that some have taken the others backwards, but you know, it was the ideal. It was the Sufi ideal, and he was bringing it into economics. But that was always one of his things. The people that can should really help others. And not just giving stuff, but help employ them. Give them worthwhile work was an important thing to do. I mean, he really tried to live by his Sufi ideals. He wrote a book on Sufism and economics. So that idea of pleasure, you know, it's like we've all probably been there. You know, there's something that we just either enjoy so much, or a person we like so much, or a food that we just adore, potato chips. And, you know, don't even bring them in the house because they're going to be gone within 5 minutes, because why should I be thinking about them? They're just sitting there. I'll eat them all. So, you know, you just have to figure it out, and you create a kind of discipline. And you say, is this healthy? You know, am I grasping? Am I holding on too hard?
No, Maria, can I share a story that a great teacher of mine told me once?
Sure.
And she was in India. and everyone was working on their own development. Mm-hmm. But she was told that she was supposed to go and teach and help others.
Yeah, you've heard that story. Mm-hmm. When Rinpoche, all my friends were saying, "What are you doing? You're working so hard. You're doing this and you're doing that." I was doing, I mean, I was studying every day. I had the keys to the temple. I could lock myself in. But, you know, I was helping. I was helping some of the lamas learn English and American idiotism and language and doing other things. Teaching English, you know, many things. Anyway, my friends are saying, "You're wasting your time. You're here. You should be in retreat. You should be in retreat. You know, that's the only way you're going to really get somewhere. You got to go up to Jeshida and go to retreat." I'm like, and I asked Rinpoche, "People say I've just made myself more busy. I'm not benefiting in any way from my time here, really, deeply." And his response was, "Some people play at spirituality and some people live it." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let others do what you do. You're doing what you need to help other people. Mm-hmm. That's the way of the Buddha. I mean, really, isn't that the way of the Buddha and the Bodhisattva and Jesus? And I mean, I'm not any of them, but you know, I do feel a little inspired to try to do something beyond myself and so again, naturally, happiness is lost in the search for pleasure, and the self becomes drowned in the pursuit of other things. The way of the mystic is to find self in all its aspects, to learn and to understand the self within and without.
Could you repeat that? The way of the mystic.
Yeah, the way of the mystic is to find self in all its aspects. To learn and to understand the self within and without. It's as if, you know, I would also say if you have this constant yearning for something, well, that's the call, that's the self calling out for something to be fulfilled. It may not happen in this moment, but it is something we can move towards. I'm trying to remember how Murshid Hidayat would put it. He would say something to the effect, you put the goal before oneself, and as you move towards the goal moves towards you. But there's an aspect of concentration, isn't there? You keep the focus, you keep concentrated. And there again, that's all Murshid teaches absolutely that. First you study, then you concentrate on what you study. What does that really mean? It's not just words. What's that really mean deeply? And then you meditate upon it. Without grasping. You meditate on it deeply. You don't even have to question, do I really understand it? You will understand it. When Dalai Lama used to teach, you know, he'd do, in the springtime, he'd do like a 31-day teaching. We'd all go to the temple. And he'd say, there'd always be a text, so we could follow the text with him. But he'd always say, most important thing is to let your mind be open and let the teachings enter the mind stream. Don't grasp, because as soon as you're grasping at what I just said, you're not going to catch what I'm about to say. You know? Mm-hmm. It's trust. Trust in God. Trust in the process. Yes, please.
I'm making a leap here, but part of what I'm hearing and what you're sharing of Murshid's words too is the embodiment of the master.
The spirit of guidance.
And that master has to do with a mastery of oneself.
Yeah. not hung. That's good. And the next line is the spirit of guidance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that still voice within. As long as it doesn't tell you to hurt yourself or others, you're probably okay. But, you know, to listen, to call upon, you know, call upon that spirit of guidance to come, that you can hear, you know, that I may hear thy voice which constantly cometh from within. Line from the prayer. We really do just do, but we often, a lot of times don't think, or feel.
Mm-hmm.
Feel. We feel, but we don't feel.
What did Joe Miller say about that? Thinking and feeling.
Yeah.
You remember the quote?
Yeah.
Stinking
you
from
thinking. You get more stinking from thinking than you can from drinking, but the feel is for real.
Did you ever meet him, Jabbar?
No, when I first got to know you, you came up to me and you said, well, you look like Joe Miller.
Well, I was just going to say it again, because you still look.
I wish I was as cool as he is.
You don't have to wish, you can just tune in. My time. My gosh, the whole rhythm of this class has been very different.
Yeah, really. I think I need to keep my mouth shut.
No, I like it. I think it's good when we can talk about things. I'm just toying with, it's your choice, everyone. Would you like to do, well, we can do, I think, what time is it, though?
2:30.
Do we have 15 minutes, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'd like to do this practice, because Merchant is talking within and without, and with these two aspects, kind of like what Guyon was saying, you know, it's not just this and it's not just that, it's like the yin-yang, you know? Everything is part of everything else, and truly we know that from a science point of view. We know that from a spiritual point of view. We say it, at least. But, you know, it would be nice if we could come to experience it, even if momentary. So there's these two wazifas that are often done in tandem, and one is batin, B-A-T-I-N. Sometimes you hear batin. It's dialectical again. And the other one is zahir. So batin is like the most hidden treasure, precious. Often those things are hidden for a reason. It's the most hidden, precious treasure. And zahir is a radiantly manifest. So, when we think about those two things together, we're calling upon the revelation of the hidden treasure, which is the self. And the self is also that ray of God, divine. And I think often people are very sad in life because they haven't really realized their purpose. So we're calling forth to really understand our purpose. And it doesn't mean we have to be a Nobel Peace Prize winner or laureate in some other way. But it means we just become so intimate with who we truly are and what our intended purpose is to be, that we can then become an expression of that. So with Baten, we're going into this special hidden treasure and we're asking it to come forth and manifest through our being. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do it again. 33 times, 11 aloud, 11 on a whisper, and 11 silently. As you do these practices, always feel where the vibration is in your body. Sort of pay attention to that. You don't need to analyze it, but what it's doing is it's those centers that Merchant was talking about, it's starting to get them activated. Silently breathe in Bhatan and out Zahir. Yasa here. I'm sorry, I don't think we have time for the other practice. We'd rush it. But I have recorded the instructions for that. Because, you know, I have some students abroad that can't come to classes. So that is one of the practices that I ask people to do daily, and I have that in an audio file. I could send it to you. It's also on the website.
Okay, thank you.
And I can also send you the instructions, any of you, you know, a map to share.
Do they vary from what you taught us yesterday?
The purification breaths do not vary. The phrases remain the same. Then again, there are many, many different breaths. And Gemma had mentioned we have a practice manual on the table.
I'm not talking specifically on the love and the light practice you taught yesterday.
No, that is one that stays. And then I said, as I said, there are variations of that. In terms of if someone tells you, prescribes the elemental breaths, that's same rhythmic pattern, same cycles, but different concentrations on color and direction.
Yeah.
If it's the healing, then it's with Yashafi, Yakafi.
Yeah, I do all those.
Yeah. But this one's the purification breath as given by an icon. And it's I inhale divine light and life, I radiate divine life and light. Excuse me, I also like the language of Wazifa, because I think it, you know, the mind doesn't attach to conceptual ideas about light and life. So, you know, sometimes I experiment, and I breathe in Yanur, light, and I breathe out Yahai. You know, it's interesting, you can... I think it's okay to be creative. It's also good to do the practices as prescribed and to know them.
Yeah, I do both. It's good.
It's good. It's really good. Well, let us close today with this thought of all beings. And we send our light and our love and our little bit of our life force. Many people need it. And, you know, we pray for wise leadership worldwide. We pray for people to greet each other in love. We pray that all beings really have happiness, true inner happiness. And that the causes and conditions arise in their lives for that happiness. In whatever way, wherever they are. And we ask that all people have a sense of self that isn't denigrated in some way or ostracized or put asunder, but that each human being and each living thing can realize its purpose without any kind of aggression or harm coming to them. For when this happens, there will truly be a beautiful harmony and peace everywhere. May it